Off the Ball Breakfast.
I have not seen a minute of this tournament.
That's what the cool kids say these days.
Genuinely haven't.
Everyone's saying that. I haven't seen a second of it.
It's not a thing. It hasn't even...
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18 plus gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Now then, we wanted to check in on Women's Euro 2025 in Switzerland. The first round of games has been completed, and perhaps most strikingly, England were beaten 2-1. By France on Saturday, of course. The Lionesses are defending champions of this competition. At the London Independence, Miguel Delaney is in Switzerland. Evening, Miguel. How are you doing?
I'm actually in the Stockborn Arena in two now, as you can probably hear behind me, about to watch Spain-Belgium. Usually this is actually an incredible view, but because there's Alps all around it, but it's obscured by clouds. There's a massive thunderstorm.
Right.
But it probably shouldn't affect too much, because I think Spain are obviously heavy favourites for this and heavy favourites for the tournament.
Yeah, I can imagine. If we go back to Saturday, first of all, Miguel, Serena Wiegmann had never lost a game at the Euros as a manager, full stop, until Saturday. So Wednesday's game against the Netherlands is now essentially a knockout tie for England.
Oh, completely, yeah. And not just a knockout tie, but, I mean, like, that's one decisive aspect of it. But another is, in Wiegmann's 3 years, as you mentioned there, she'd never even drawn a game at the Euros. She won every game in 2017 with the Netherlands and won the tournament. She'd won every game in 2022 with England and won the tournament. So we're like, I mean, suddenly she's in a completely new situation. And I think it's not just that she's kind of lost 100% record there. It's also, I think, what was quite concerning for England about Saturday was that she got it quite badly wrong. This is someone who kind of almost had this, you know, infallible air in England because of what she's done. Naturally enough, because she's made them European champions and they won a trophy for the first time. But she got a lineup very badly wrong on Saturday. She basically left a kind of a midfield two against France's very strong three. And I think even more concerning about that was, like I wrote in the Independent on Saturday, and they had been training with Lauren James, their kind of a creative star, at the top of midfield all week as part of that midfield three. And it wasn't working as smoothly as in previous systems in previous tournaments. And they kind of persevered with it anyway. They're relying on a lot of players that aren't fully fit, especially some of their best players, like James, like Georgia Stanway. And now they've suddenly got an awful lot to fix for a match that's against a good Dutch side who can beat them. And, of course, there's all sorts of other dimensions to this, because the Netherlands are Wiegmann's home country, who she has won the tournament before.
So is the Lauren James experiment over?
Sorry?
Is the Lauren James experiment over, a one and done in that position?
Well, it's interesting because I directly asked Wiegmann after the game. Now, she is decisive. She's abrupt. She doesn't really... some of the players call her blunt. She disputes that, but maybe they dispute it in the Netherlands, given the way goes across. But I directly asked after the game, if she could do it again, would she use this formation again in the French match? And will she use the formation going forward? And she basically said, I haven't decided yet. And then I asked her, like, any regrets about it? And she said, no regrets. I don't think it's necessarily, obviously, an experiment with James. James should be in the team because, like, she's the most creative talent. But it's about where they use her. So it might be back out on the wing. But the interesting thing is, I mean, over the last two tournaments where England have won it and then got to the final against Spain in Australia 2 years ago, what they're basically kind of characterised themselves, and what really worked for them was a fairly rudimentary style of football. And it was only once actually they went back to that in the last few minutes of the French game. Now, to be fair, the entire tone of the game did change because of what was an unexpected goal by Ciara Walsh. But suddenly, it wasn't just psychology that changed. England went back to kind of their usual approach, a fairly straight formation and fairly direct play. They were playing with speed again, and they did really worry France. So suddenly that is something else for Wiegmann to think about in the build-up to this match.
Yeah, this is an England side who seem to be vulnerable in a number of different areas at this point, and they've been relatively inconsistent since the last World Cup, really, since the last major tournament. Is it just have we seen the peak of this England team, I guess, is probably a reasonable question to ask at this point.
I think that's possible, yeah. I mean, yeah, like before the World Cup in 2023, Wiegmann had only lost one game with England. That was a friendly against Australia. So her first her first competitive defeat, and it was only her second defeat overall, was in the World Cup final. And since then, it's almost like a bit of an air of invincibility has gone. They've lost six times or seven times now, and like they've stopped keeping clean sheets. There's been all sorts of other discussions around the squad over, you know, whether that team has been together too long. And obviously, we had the kind of three retirements before the tournament, which I suppose, I mean, in any normal circumstance, three big players retiring like that. Now, Fran Kirby was from a different situation, but players retiring like that in the eve of the tournament would usually kind of set alarms. There would be questions about the chemistry of the team, whether Wiegmann herself, where we're getting to the point now where she's been there a bit too long, where the message isn't coming in the same way. Now, to be fair, she's tried to address that by making radical changes to the team. But now, I suppose, we're in this transitional period now. And I think it's also fair to say the squad isn't as strong as it used to be. They don't have the same strength and depth. They do have attacking talent, but not all of it is fit. And it does feel like Wiegmann is still trying to figure it out. And, I mean, this is the other thing. In England's two previous campaigns, they started them slowly. And even, like, for all the cultural event that Euro 2022 became in England 3 summers ago, that was a bit of a slow burner. It was I was there when they beat Spain in the quarterfinal. And like that was when it really took off. But they had a slow enough start. So that's been a habit of Wiegmann's teams. And in this tournament now, they can't afford a slow start. And I have to say, like, Saturday was, other than maybe 5 minutes at the start and 10 minutes at the end, Saturday was bad. It was a really alarming performance. And they've got to suddenly get all of that right for Wednesday, or else really they're going home. I mean, anything but victory puts them in a very tricky situation. And of course, defeat eliminates them.
I presume we're saying now that France are genuine contenders for this year's tournament?
You would think so, yeah. I mean, some of their attacking quality is amazing. I think that was what really stood out about the game. France just had this kind of vitality and pace and attack that was completely lacking in England. Just that there was a vibrancy about them, and England didn't really know how to handle it. In saying that, they did look really open at the back, the French, and when England started to put it up to them late on, you could sense the panic. Also, the manager himself almost got it wrong with pre-substitutions that like, kind of change the tone of the French team. And like, I'm about to watch Spain. I don't think France are at the level of Spain. That doesn't necessarily mean they'll win it. It is a knockout. Once you get into one-off games, then kind of, you know, that's when you can have, even a Spain can have one bad match and suddenly you're out. But I do think Spain are a level above everyone else. But France are, yeah, probably the next level down. In fact, maybe you'd arguably say that at the moment, the second strongest team of the competition, especially after Germany lost their captain through an ACL injury.
Yeah, it seems that way. Certainly the most striking performance from the weekend just gone. But when it comes to the tournament overall, it did feel beforehand that maybe, look, you're comparing Wembley to Basel, for example, and maybe there's going to be a natural step down from 3 years ago. But it does feel that in a country like Switzerland, we're operating in smaller grounds, smaller capacities. Does it feel like a much smaller tournament compared to 3 years ago?
Yeah, it does. I have to say, and even the England game, I mean, I was speaking to people who say we're in the VIP box with the FA and all that on Saturday night. And some of them just commented on, like, say, I don't want to make an unfair comparison to the men's game, because the men's game is obviously, like, I mean, we're talking about something that's become one of the most historically popular social pursuits that's ever existed. So nothing can compare to that, really. But it was just, I suppose, given the popularity of England over the past 3 years, or the national team, that maybe it would have been expected that Saturday was a bigger event. It didn't quite feel like that. I think you're right about the stadiums in Switzerland. It felt a bit more like, kind of, compared to the buzz around 2022. And I have to say, 2023 in Australia was brilliant. It felt a little bit more like an under-21 tournament. I mean, I'm here in Tun now. Spain are the best team in the world. They're great to watch. And I'd say the ground isn't half full. So I think that is an issue. And I think that ties in with something bigger that's been felt in England too, whereas the women's game is basically, until around 2021, and obviously certainly in England 2022, it's been this constant upward trajectory. It's been a part of this boom. I think, crucially, participation numbers are massive in the UK, certainly now. We know in Ireland from the effect of 2023 as well. But from speaking to people who work around the game, I think just this year, after kind of constant upward curve, there's maybe been a natural bit of plateauing. And there's almost like this feeling there's a little bit of a kind of, not pressure in this tournament, but they need something big to happen to kind of perpetuate what has been kind of constant upward growth. Because on the eve of the tournament, these stats came out from the UK, where attendances had been down 35% on the previous season. And that's despite, say, a club like Arsenal, taking women's football really seriously and having massive attendances for every game, and they play at the full home stadium. Well, I think there's been a bit of an uneven effect. So there's been a bit of a drop-off, and hence they could do with an event, this tournament developing into a more of an event. And also in England, say, specifically, what they could really do without, I suppose, an early elimination. I mean, it's an unfair pressure to put on the players, given that they've been the cause of this huge cultural event in England. But now it's almost come full circle a little bit, where almost they're kind of playing for that again, if you know what I mean, because it does feel like they need to kind of get that interest generated. One of the things that strikes me about where women's football is right now, it feels a little bit like, in England anyway, that it might become a little bit like rugby union, where the grassroots and kind of bread and butter of the game isn't necessarily that popular and doesn't necessarily get massive audiences. But the international level, and particularly international matches involved nationally, can become huge events. I mean, Wembley has obviously had some big crowds. Obviously the entire tournament and England's campaign ties into that.
Does it feel like there is, at the same time, a massive glare around this England team at the moment? Or is that also turned down a little bit? Like, just from your perspective covering this tournament, does it feel that there's a pressure, in a good way, in a negative way, that comes from the outside influences around this England team?
So I was speaking to someone within the camp straight after the French defeat. And they use that exact word, pressure. They're feeling the pressure, and it's not a positive pressure. I think it's a bit because they went into the tournament a little bit uncertain of where they were and what they were as a team. They hadn't figured out the tactics yet, and obviously being defending European champions and having got to a final, suddenly there's a new expectation. But that when it's not the same team, and also, and to be fair to them, this shouldn't be ruled out either. They're in probably the most difficult group of the tournament. They've got one of the favourites in France. They've got a good Dutch side, if not a great Dutch side. And then the Welsh, who they're maybe the Welsh are basically the whipping boys of the group, despite the progress they've made, or whipping girls, if you like. Sorry. And England are almost unlucky to play them in the last match, because suddenly they're in a situation where either they'll know exactly what they have to do against the Welsh, or they might be out because they've only got a point in their previous two games. So they've really had to, you know, hit the ground running, and they haven't done that. Well, we'll see what happens tomorrow night, but this is the huge pressure.
On this morning's Off the Ball breakfast,
we had some of this.
There's going to be the end of a drought for one of them now, and a lot smaller.
That wasn't a drought. You didn't have a drought.
You had a little torch.
Right. They had a hard.
They turned off the taps for about 5 years. That's all that happened. You didn't have a drought.
And we also had this.
I remember going to my local school week before, or 2 weeks before All Ireland, and whatever happened, it was a helicopter landing in the pitch across the road. 3 or 4 hours, and this parent come up to me. She goes, "When the son came home yesterday and says that David Beckham landed in a helicopter and came to our school today, he said he thinks he just Francis had the greatest day of his life." Wrong DB.
You can catch everything from this morning's Off the Ball breakfast on the Go Loud app, and every weekday morning from 7:30.
I was chatting to you a few weeks ago, Miguel, about which of the footballing events this summer you will be covering, whether it's going to be the Club World Cup or whether it's going to be the Women's Euros. In reality, I should have asked you about the three different events that are happening this summer. As every year now tells us, the transfer market is the biggest story in football quite often in many, many summers. I see you've been tweeting today about Arsenal's interest in Victor Gyökeres, and it looks like they're going to be opting for him as opposed to Benjamin Sesko, and this thing is getting very real now.
Yeah. So things have advanced there. I think, from my understanding, more of the work had actually been done on Sesko for far longer. But ultimately, this summer, Arsenal, they thought they had an agreement with Leipzig, but Leipzig have proven very frustrating to deal with. The player hasn't forced his way out, because that's not his way. But ultimately, Arteta wants a striker in before pre-season, and hence they've advanced on Gyökeres. Now, there's still not a deal struck with Sporting there. And I do have to say, while obviously now Gyökeres look much closer, I do half wonder whether that situation gets closer might in some ways force Leipzig's hands, and they might and suddenly that deal might be revived. But at the moment, yeah, things are happening with Gyökeres. The club are openly negotiating with Sporting. Sporting, I think, wants between 55 to 70 million all in, with 10 to 15 million of that being on add-ons. But there's still no deal yet. I think Arsenal are going to end up having a very busy summer, because I think they'll end up going for Eze as well from Crystal Palace.
And was there any truth to the Nani Madueke links?
I mean, like, they've been talking with Chelsea about that. They do want another wide player. They want backup for Saka as well. But at the moment, Chelsea's price is far too high. Arsenal won't go near 50 million for him.
What's your understanding with regards to the standard of Gyökeres versus the standard of Sesko? It sometimes feels, from a very Premier League-centric point of view, we can often have these vague ideas about who's actually better.
So from what I know, Arsenal's analytics team and the recruitment, they consider kind of Sesko and Gyökeres right now at a similar level. The kind of where the difference lies is that Gyökeres is just gone 27, Sesko has just gone 22, and Sesko is considered to potentially have a much higher ceiling. So with Sesko, say, you could be talking about someone who's an Alexander Isaac in 2-3 years' time. And which I think is why, all things being equal, I think they probably would have preferred to go for Sesko. But obviously another element of that is Arsenal want to win now. If Sesko's that bit more difficult to do, I think it's natural they go to Gyökeres. I have to say, I do personally think there's a few more red flags about Gyökeres. I know everyone's going to say on social media, Rio Ferdinand's comments have done the round. I know some of those sentiments actually shared within Premier League clubs. Other big clubs have had a look with him. They think he's a little bit slow to get a shot off. There's also a concern, I suppose, that he's 27 now and most of his goals have come in Portugal. But that with one of Portugal's strongest teams in Sporting. And, like, I mean, you've seen what Darwin Nunes say. There's not a clear translation from the Portuguese league to the modern Premier League in that sense. Although the same could be said of the Bundesliga. And, like, Havertz actually used to be an example of this when he was at Chelsea, say, although I think he has been good for Arsenal. Another example is Timo Werner, who went from Leipzig to Chelsea and didn't work out. But it's obviously the difference isn't as pronounced as with the Portuguese league. So from that perspective, Arsenal, are leaning on obviously the stats and the analytics, and also I suppose the various different elements of the deal or the deals and what can be done right now.
One last one for you, Miguel. I presume you've got zero FOMO about the Club World Cup.
Not really. I have to say. I mean, look, going to New York would be nice and all that, but I'm not sure how many of your listeners are the same. As a football journalist, even, I haven't had the same incentives to watch. Like, I haven't had to watch it in the same way. And I was also off for some of it. And I didn't watch as much as I expected. There was an element. I did watch a fair bit of it, because, like, I have to, obviously, especially when the English team is involved and some of the European teams. But there was an element of some of it, and I noticed some talk of the colleagues, of getting up in the morning and kind of checking the results. And I part of that, I think, as well is, look, I think the idea of the Club World Cup is quite noble because the wealth of the game has to be spread beyond Western Europe, all of that. I know, like, Zvonimir Boban was one of the people that came up with the idea, but there's obviously questions about its application and how much it's been politicised. I mean, the worst thing you can say for the tournament is actually a bit of a kind of a Trojan horse. So Saudi Pro League clubs have their own version of Champions League. But and all of that as well, like, I mean, say there's a game like Bayern against Paris Saint-Germain, you know, I mean, it was a good game, although I said this is one of the issues with the tournament. It came at a massive cost to Bayern because they've lost Jamal Musiala for who knows how long. I mean, that's worth, or that costs a lot more than the value of the prize money they get for the competition. But the issue with a game like that, as good as PSG Bayern might be, it's not PSG Bayern in the Champions League, which we have seen a lot, because like the Champions League is a competition like that has 70 years of history going back through the European Cups. The Club World Cup just doesn't. It doesn't have that mythology, it doesn't have that folklore. And there has been a sense from speaking to people on the ground there of some of the clubs treating it a bit like an exhibition. So I don't want to say it doesn't feel like real football, but it doesn't feel like the most intense, highest level of football, where whatever kind of, I know, like, say, the level of the women's game provokes debate. I mean, the women's game, the women's Euros, it's a real proper tournament with, you know, something very authentic at stake. And I think in terms of the kind of the merits of the competition right now, on that level, I actually don't think there's any comparison.
Yeah, it seems you made the right choice, Miguel. Enjoy the rest of your time in Switzerland. We'll chat to you soon.
Cheers. Thank you. All right.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
I have not seen a minute of this tournament.
That's what the cool kids say these days.
Genuinely haven't.
Everyone's saying that. I haven't seen a second of it.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.